Welcome to another episode of Help Me Help You, the podcast where I explore the ins and outs of the sports agent world by bringing you interviews with a diverse group of guests ranging from professional athletes, agents, scouts, and front office personnel. Thank you for joining me today. I'm your host, Jason Hoffman. Today's episode is number 3, and in honor of that, I'm going to start naming the greatest baseball player ever to wear each episode number. So starting with today's episode, who is the greatest player ever to wear number 3 in Major League Baseball history? Think about that for a sec. I'm going to go with none other than the Bambino himself, the Sultan of SWAT, Babe Ruth. Always love that nickname, the Sultan of SWAT. And actually, today's episode ties into Babe Ruth in a way, and let's see if you guys can pick up on how. So without further ado, I'm going to pick up where we left off last week. I'm going to take it back to 2005. And for those of you wondering if that poor guy ever got out of his parents' house, out of the old high school bedroom he was living in at the time, the answer is yes. I had my own place. It was my first full year in the draft. My clients had all been drafted, and now I had to negotiate my first ever draft signing bonuses. The bullets were now live, as they like to say. And being the new kid on the block, my immediate concern was if these teams that I had to negotiate with would be receptive to me being a rookie. So I called one of the scouting directors for a club I would be negotiating with, and I let him know that I'd be handling that player's contract. Told him a little bit about my background, and he said something to me that was very comforting and at the time surprising to me. He goes, "It doesn't matter. The only thing we care about is getting our player," meaning my client that they had just drafted. It was comforting because I knew at that point that all I had to do was execute the deal, which I was fully prepared to do. There would be no politics or anything else. It would just be a negotiation. Now, I learned a valuable lesson that day, and one that I want to share with some of you young agents that might just be getting started. The lesson is this: teams don't care who does the deal as long as the deal gets done, period. They just want their guy signed and in uniform. Now, I say this because as young agents, it's easy to get intimidated and feel like the only people capable of negotiating contracts all work at these mega agencies that you hear about. Well, I'm here to tell you that that's just not the case. However, what teams do care about is that you're not an idiot. Now, how can I put that mildly? Again, teams want to make sure that they're not dealing with an idiot. So what does that mean, not an idiot? Well, it means as an agent that you're number one, prepared, number two, you're professional, and number three, you're reasonable. You must be all three. If not, good luck finding any scouting director, general manager, or even an area scout that'll want to deal with you. Now, I won't go into detail about all three, but I will say that they're all equally as important. But if I had to stress the importance of one to a young agent, it would be number three. Be reasonable. Your main priority as an agent is to negotiate, plain and simple. And being unreasonable just makes your job almost impossible to do correct. And this doesn't mean that you just accept any offer they throw at you. No, it's quite the opposite. But it does mean that what you're asking for can be supported with data and facts. Don't just throw out some arbitrary round number like $1 million because you think your client's worth that, but you can't back it up with any concrete argument or market data. I'm going to tell you why. Billionaire team owners, they just aren't impressed by big numbers, and general managers deal with tens of millions of dollars in contracts every day. So you must be able to prove that what you're asking for is reasonable. Because a contract negotiation is not just a zero-sum game. Now, if you can be all three, you stand a chance. But that's only part of the equation to being a good agent. You must also be unflappable with an extra helping of toughness. So after my guys were all signed and headed off to their designated cities to start their careers, my focus had to quickly shift to equipment deals. In minor league baseball, the agent pays for the player's equipment unless, of course, a company wants to do an endorsement deal with that player. Now, I had success with brands like Nike, Rawlings, etc., but the marketing and endorsement landscape has changed drastically from 20 years ago. back then, when a guy reached the major leagues, he automatically almost always got an endorsement deal or at least received free equipment from a company. But that's just no longer the case anymore. I mean, today you could find big leaguers that are paying for their own equipment. So after that first season, my clients all came back home better at baseball than when they had left. I had gotten better as an agent, too. I took a tremendous amount of pride in the work that I did, and to this day, I still do. We hung out that offseason. Since all of them were relatively close, I'd take them out to lunch from time to time. I'd go watch them do their off-season workouts at a training facility. You know, my goal then was the same as it is now, and that is to be that person to them that I needed when I was their age. One thing that I learned over the years, though, is that I can't control everything. And I've had other agents actually tell me that I care too much. So when a player that I represent isn't performing well or has a bad game, I feel their pain too as a former player. I mean, I can put a player in the best situation possible with a great contract in a great organization, but I can't play for them. And sometimes good players are put in great environments and they simply don't perform. And as an agent, you can't beat yourself up over that. As my players from that first draft class made their way through the minor leagues, some of them stumbled while others just kept getting better. Now, this is natural as players move through a system. The competition gets more consistent, making the overall level of play harder. Guys get faster, they get stronger as they climb the ladder, and, you know, balls that used to get through the infield are now outs. And it's not always your highest paid clients or even your most talented clients that make it to the big leagues. You just never know how guys are going to adjust through their minor league career. But what I do know is this. The ones that can consistently adjust and adjust the quickest are the ones that tend to make it to the show. Now, that guy for me was David Hernandez. Hernandez was a 16th round pick out of a junior college in California. In fact, this had been his third time being drafted before he finally signed when I picked him up as a client. And even though he was a 16th round pick, I was able to negotiate him a deal that paid him closer to top five round money. Now, this, along with other factors, caused him to pass up on a scholarship to pitch at the University of Oklahoma the following year. Now, on a side note, I want to share something that I share with some of the young agents that I work with at my agency. And it's this. Those first two draft years for you as an agent are crucial. I liken them to a team's draft. When a team gets to draft day, it's imperative that one, if not both, of their first two picks in that draft make it to the big leagues. They just cannot miss on both picks because of the talent drop-off after those selections. Now, I explained to them that the same thing goes for us as agents. Our first 2 years in the draft have to be productive. They have to produce at least one, if not two, big leaguers. And then you have to hope that the big leaguer at least makes it to arbitration and then on to free agency. The reason being is because that is what keeps you on pace to make money as an agent. Now, unlike the NFL or the NBA, where guys get drafted and have a shot at making the team right away, in baseball, the number one overall pick is going to be riding a bus for the foreseeable future in the minor leagues. Which, looking at it from a high level, simply means that you as an agent won't get paid again until he reaches the major leagues. Now, Hernandez became a double-A all-star in the Eastern League, and it was quickly becoming apparent that he was going to be pitching in the major leagues sooner rather than later. Fast forward to 2009, he's in triple-A as a starting pitcher, and he's picked up right where he left off the previous season. Then it happens. He finally gets the call to Baltimore to make his major league debut against Miguel Cabrera and the Detroit Tigers. Now, I immediately hopped on a plane to Maryland, and it felt great. I got to tell you, I mean, I knew that he belonged, and as an agent, I knew that I belonged too. Under Armour was cool. They're based right there in Maryland, so they made him a pair of custom cleats that night with his number on them to wear in his big league debut. Myself, along with his family, we were all sitting directly behind home plate, on pins and needles, of course, living and dying on every pitch. And the one thing I can remember about that night is that it was just extremely humid, very, very humid out that night. Now, he did get into a bit of a jam in the first inning, but he worked his way out of that largely due to the fact that he struck out Miguel Cabrera. Now, I don't want to tell his story because he will be on the podcast to do that himself. So I'll end it by saying this. He got the win that night on 108 pitches. And for the time being, I mean, everything seemed just right in the world. Everything seemed perfect. Then you realize, man, he's got to go do this again in 5 days. So I remember I looked at the schedule to see when his next start would be and who it would be against. And to my surprise, it was clear across the country. They had to go play the Seattle Mariners. He had to go face Ichiro, Ken Griffey Jr., Adrian Beltre. I mean, welcome to the show. It gets no easier. All right, that's going to do it for today, folks. Enjoy your weekend. And if you're a NASCAR fan like me, enjoy another Super Bowl in the form of the Daytona 500. I will, of course, be pulling for my guy, Chase Elliott, driving the 9 car, and I will see you next week. Take care, everybody.